This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Good times, bad hangovers, and a lot of coffee. And I'm sure there are some Texas fans after Saturday night's game against LSU that probably dealt with that loss the way many would do and kind of had a few cocktails. And then Sunday morning, we're just feeling the hangover of losing a football game, but also the hangover that comes with drinking too much booze. But I don't think there'll be any bad hangovers after the Rice game Saturday night down in Houston. But this is episode 17 of the Dustin McComas Show on theyak.com, and I'm super fired up about this one. I was sitting down this morning kind of going through some things that I was going to talk about today, and I was like, I got to get this dude on. Why haven't I thought about this before? I have, but now that we're able to really execute these interviews on these podcasts super easily, with the Rice game being back down in Houston, I'm joined by Grant Pinkerton, of course, of Pinkerton's Barbecue down in the Houston area. Grant, thanks for coming on, man. I know you're a very busy man. I'm sure the restaurant's a popular place with a bunch of Texas fans coming to town this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have U of H and Wazoo tonight. So we've had those guys in here too. It's just been pretty interesting. Some Leach disciples.
If they are anything like he is, that's got to be some interesting conversations and people that roll in there for that game. Yeah, NRG is a popular place with tonight's game. Then, of course, Texas and Rice as well. But Grant and I go way, way back. I mean, we go back to the University of Texas. We are in the same fraternity. I was reminded today of, like, when we had fireworks fights in the summer, that summer before I think you were a freshman at UT. Like, I don't know if we can even talk about some of those stories, like, on the podcast, but we go way, way, way back. And of course, as well, you know, ever since I've met you, you've been such a big Texas football fan, a knowledgeable Texas football fan, a passionate Texas football fan. I feel like I bump into you every year at the state fair at the Texas OU game, which I give you props. You called that win last year before the game when a lot of people weren't calling that victory. So you were at the LSU game, correct?
Yep, I was there in my usual seat, in my usual garb. Cheering my usual cheers.
Now, before we get to your thoughts on the LSU game, are you gonna have to change the game day gear now that they actually lost a game for the first time in a while?
Strong consideration. That's gonna go to a vote between my fiance and I. So this is our one opportunity that we can change our outfits for the rest of the year because we're coming off of a loss.
Yeah, that's true. But you can also put it to the test and say, you know what, they are playing Rice. Like, you know, maybe I can still keep rocking it and you know, with the chances of a win being so high, of course, if they lose, then you're like, oh my gosh, maybe it was my fault.
Yes, it will be my fault. I'm thinking I can get some good juju back on my clothes this weekend.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good opportunity for that. So what were your general takeaways from the LSU game? Obviously a game that, man, you got to that fourth quarter and it had lived up to the hype to that point, even though the second quarter was kind of sluggish all around, you know, when LSU kind of extended that lead a little bit. The game had a little of everything, you know, some fourth and one situations and then an interception and then a drop touchdown. And it was third and 17. It was kind of a crazy game that ended up living to the hype. But what was your main takeaways from the game?
Well, I thought, you know, there'd been a lot of talk this offseason about the, you know, new LSU offense and those kind of things. And a lot of chatter from the Texas side that, you know, well, we see spread offenses all the time and this, that, and the other. But, you know, kind of my hesitation before the game, I said, you know, Joe Burrow can come in here and keep a level head and spray the ball around. So we haven't had the best luck of defending against the spread. Yes, we face it all the time, but it's not like we have a shutdown defense on that. And so kind of uneasy going into the game, and Joe Burrow really impressed me. I really didn't think that he'd have that much poise operating a new system like he did. And he delivered the balls. His timing was excellent. He didn't really miss a pass. I think there's only like 6 or 8 incomplete passes on his end the entire night. And most of them are right on the money. Their wide receivers were probably better than, they're all 5-star talent, but they're pretty impressive. But it was interesting, you know, turning to my dad at one point in the game, he's sitting with us and we both said, hey, I think we're better than these guys. And I'm not so sure that that's still not true. I mean, you play that game 10 times, we might win it our fair share. We might lose it our fair share. But I thought the teams were pretty evenly matched. And, you know, there's a scenario going into halftime there where it's 21-3 Texas. And it's kind of like Georgia redo. And but that wasn't the case, obviously. I'm definitely a more of the more aggressive ilk. So going for it on fourth down at the goal line, I'm happy to live and die by that sword. But man, when you die by it, it hurts, you know. I think before the season coming in, I thought that our defense would be a lot better by the end of the season than at the beginning of the season. And I think that that's still very much available. You know, because we're not short on talent. We're just short on experience at the moment. So it was one of those weird games where you lost, but at the end of the day, you kind of stepped back and said, okay, well, if you put your Oklahoma Sooner glasses on, you're like, okay, well, if we lost this one game and it was real tight and you can work your way through the Big 12, there's kind of no reason why you have to be quiet about potential playoff talk. But you know, the goal of this season, and from everybody I've talked to inside the building and outside the building, it's the Big 12, and that was still intact. So I felt a lot like Texas was playing with house money in that game, which I think, you know, going for it on fourth down twice, that kind of is on full display.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, it's kind of one of those tip your cap games if you're a Texas fan, because just the way Burrow played, you know, because you hear so much conversation about that new offense and all that. It's like, okay, well, you know, it hasn't faced like an actual team with talent or actual defense or whatever. So it's hard to truly project just what is that going to look like against some actual talent. And he hung in the pocket. He made a lot of really tough throws. He was smart at the line of scrimmage. He knew where he was going with the football. And like you said, they've got a lot of talent on the outside. But I feel like, you know, you mentioned the part about you and your dad talking about you're not sure Texas isn't better than this team. It's not like Texas played an A-plus game. You know, it'd be one thing if Texas just played its absolute best and they still lost. You kind of would have I think you'd have a different feeling coming out of that football game. But you look at that second quarter and then the drop touchdown and just the way the defense played with some of its issues. And it's like, you got to think that there's definitely a lot of room for growth for this Texas team, which I think should excite some people.
I 100% agree with that. And, you know, if you kind of think about it this way, LSU wins that game catching all the breaks. You can't say that Texas isn't a really good team when it took all the breaks in the game going for the other team in order to beat you by one touchdown. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's in a game like that, it's often decided by, you know, some little things here or there, or maybe some big things early on in the game. And then if you've got the quarterback that can capitalize on those sorts of things, chances are you come out victorious in that game. But you know, Sam Ehlinger is what I thought he was. That's an offense that's emerging as one of the best offenses in the country with an offensive line that's playing really well. That starting group of five on the offensive line is doing a heck of a job with, you know, Herb Hand. I know Herb Hand swings through each time he's down in Houston recruiting, which I'm starting to notice that Herb, ever since he's gone to Pinkerton's, goes to Houston to recruit more. You think there's a coincidence there?
It's mutually beneficial. Let's
Yeah, so I feel like every time Herb's down in Houston, he's swinging by Pinkerton's, but he's doing a good job with that offensive line. And, it's I know that's a tough one for Texas fans to stomach because, you know, just so much buildup around that game. But, yeah, it's funny you mentioned, you know, just the vibe around Texas this season. And it's some of the same things I've heard as well in that, you know, they really view this as a process in terms of building a program. And this is year three in that process. And while they went 10-4 last year and they won the Sugar Bowl and they played in the Big 12 championship game, all clear signs of growth, which raised the bar for this season. I think internally they view year four as like, okay, we could legitimately run the table in with our schedule this year. Like we think we're going to win every one of these games. Whereas this year, I'm not quite sure that's, that's the case. I think that there's a very real that understanding or confidence of, you know, hey, we should win the conference, but also looking ahead in this, in where they are in this process, and knowing that this is still year three. This is still something that's being built, with kind of year four being that real year of when things could truly take off from a, you can start really talking undefeated season, playoff, all those types of things. But of course, that conversation doesn't happen if they don't handle their business this year, getting back to the Big 12 championship game and winning that. But I'm sure, you mean, you've watched Texas football for a long, long time. You know, you were fortunate enough to go to school when it was the good times were still kind of rolling.
Right.
I kind of think back to when I was in college, and it's like, oh man, my first year was 2005, and my last semester was fall 2009, because I took a way long time to graduate. And it's, you know, it's like, you don't, when you're in it, you don't really realize it, that you can't really take those types of things for granted. But you've watched Texas football for a long, long time. You know, where do you kind of view where this staff is in terms of that process of building that program to getting it back to the high level?
Well, one of the things that I really focused on today, and I was actually talking to somebody about it, is we have probably not, this is like you were mentioning, this is year three of the rebuild. I think fans who kind of look down the road could kind of see that year three was going to be kind of a little bit of a question mark. There was going to be a lot of inexperience coming in, a lot of young talent that hadn't seen the field much. Whereas I think people put way too much expectations on the defense after 17, but the defense we kind of run is super reliant on a disruptive nose tackle to take away the middle of the field. You need to have an eraser at linebacker that can go sideline to sideline, which you had Malik, and you had the nose tackle in Puna. And then you need kind of cerebral cornerbacks that are mature enough to know the scheme and play in it, which, you know, we had plenty of firepower in the defense. We had Holden Hill and Sean Elliott, and hell, you had Chris Boyd. I mean, kind of looking back on it, you had all those pieces that you needed. They hadn't been in the system a long time, but you had the athletic traits and the maturity that translated. You still had some vestiges of that last year, but not as much. And this year, I think you have all that talent back, but what you're lacking is the assignment soundness and the experience in order to get there. And I think next year is the year that you really can expect the defense to kind of go back to the 2017 level. But one of the things I was talking about with the guy today was just about their recruiting. And I don't think that there has been subsequent classes of this much elite talent coming into Texas since probably 2001, 2002, 2003, that leading up to the 2005 championship where you had those classes, the Vince Young class, and then, you know, you couple that next with the Jamal Charles and, you know, go, so on and so forth. And that's kind of what we're getting back to here. And I was sitting around kind of pondering about the year after Sam leaves. You know, you have Wiley and Lee Brock at tight end as juniors. They're probably going to be like 6'6", 6'5", 260. I mean, that'll be the best tight end class, you know, position group we've had in a long time. You start looking at your defensive backs and the maturity of there and other players, and you start realizing that, man, Casey Thompson can be serviceable. That actually might be the best and easiest run at a championship that Texas is going to have. You know, next year we're going to be really good, but year five, holy crap, the depth on this team is outstanding. And then, you know, the Alabama and Clemson, these teams have shown that's what it takes to win. I mean, you got to win the culture with the physical camp and the physical practices, and you need depth in order to sustain that. You know, one of the things, like a perfect example is, you know, fourth down, fourth and one, fourth and five from the goal line. I think we score if we have Jordan Whittington both times. I mean, you have perfectly good gadget back to kick it out. I know there's plays in that playbook that are perfectly set up to get him in the end zone and score there. You know, if he's not out, you know, those kind of things. And as you kind of start to build depth, you have more of those people like you can put in place that gives you a larger buffer in those games where, you know, you're not always one twisted ankle away.
Yeah, the recruiting aspect is, you know, we're really starting to see with this team, and that there's so many guys, mainly from that 2018 class, that are already either starters or rotational players, or you know, look like guys that are going to be impact players. And, you know, they did a good job with their 2017 class with some of those evaluations. I mean, how about a guy like Samuel Cosmi, who's been really, really good at left tackle, and it looks like a future millionaire in the NFL draft the way he's playing. And that was important for them. And even a guy like Derek Kerstetter, who's really looked like a solid right tackle. You know, guys that they went in and got late in that recruiting process and kind of nailed that transition class, and then that 2018 class. And then you look at the 2019 class, got some guys. You mentioned Whittington. You know, Jake Smith caught a touchdown in the LSU game. 2020 is – it's on its way to probably like a top 10 type of class. And then 2021 is – man, it's a
ridiculous.
It's a loaded group of players in the state of Texas. And it's – I can't recall the last time where – you know, Texas always produces talent. But there haven't been many years recently where they're just loaded with no doubt five-star guys like Florida usually is, or California usually is, or maybe we're starting to see in places like Georgia that are just pumping out, you know, 4 and 5 and 6 five-star type prospects every year. Texas is going to do that in 2021. And I feel like the 2021 class is the first class that these guys are growing up with Texas being good again. You know,
right.
it's with these previous classes, they didn't have that. I mean, think back to when you were, you know, in middle school and high school. Those are your formative football days. You know, that's when you really, like, you get attached to a college team or a pro team or whatever. And of course, if you're influenced by your family as well, but you really, those are the memories that you have, you know, and a lot of these guys, didn't really grow up when Texas was good. And now that Texas, you know, has a 10-win season, a Sugar Bowl, and these 2021 guys are starting to see that, I wonder if that's starting to play a role in this recruiting. But, you make a great point in that, you know, the recruiting always matters. I mean, it drives me nuts when people say, oh, you know, the stars, whatever. It's like, well, look who finishes at the top of the recruiting rankings all the time, and then look how good those teams are on a consistent basis. Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama. I mean, those are the teams that are always recruiting at an extremely high level, and it's not a coincidence that they're often so good. So, yeah, Texas is getting back to doing that. Speaking of those formative years, do you have a favorite, like a no-doubt favorite Texas football memory? I mean, everyone's obvious answer is the Vince Young Rose Bowl. But is there anything that, like, maybe from your childhood or just a different point in time where just like, man, it just really sticks with you as a personal moment that you really identify with?
Yeah, when Ricky Williams broke the rushing record, I was in DKR with my dad and my brother that game, and we watched it. And I actually called it for that play. I said, he's going to break the record right here. I was like 8 or whatever. My dad was like, he's got to go 64 yards to break the record. I said, he's going to do it. And he did it. But actually, that's not the actual memory. The funniest part is DKR was super quiet right before that play. And some guy up sitting by the press box is what it sounded like. Waterboy had just come out and he yelled, "You can do it, Ricky." And like, dude, everybody in the stadium started laughing. And I mean, it was like loud and clear. You could hear it. And I mean, I can still hear that guy's voice today saying, "You can do it, Ricky." And then him taking off and running with it. And then my dad looking at me like, "Holy shit, I cannot believe you just, you just called that." So, that, you know, the Vince Young thing is crazy. We were jumping around my house and, there were some, you know, anecdotal stuff in 08, 09 going up, you know, to that whole stuff. But man, as far as memories burned in my head, that A&M game, and then some of the, Nebraska games, watching it in the house with my dad, and the emotions my dad was showing during those Nebraska games sticks out in my head.
Oh, I forget of there was a time in life when we watched football post, like immediately post Waterboy.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, oh man, the endless quotes that would come from people just watching football post Waterboy was a, yeah. Adam Sandler's made some terrible movies recently, but, you know, when he struck gold with his dumb but hilarious movies, they were quotable for a long, long time. Well, we got the Rice game coming up, which, I mean, I'm not expecting much of a football game. So You know, Rice, if you look at the S&P Plus ratings on ESPN, is down at number 126 in the country out of 130. So this should be a comfortable victory for Texas. Maybe, perhaps there's a little bit of a hangover thing going on, but I don't get the impression that that's an issue in this program. I think they do a good job of getting in front of those types of things and really hammering them home. And they've got enough player leadership now. I'm sure those guys are anxious to get back on the field and get back in the win column. So let's get to the more important things. People are going to be looking for things to do in Houston. They're going to be hungry. They've got to come see you. Where are you guys located at? You know, you have anything special going on for the game day, or kind of what's on the menu right now at Pinkerton's?
Well, we're 1504 Airline Drive up in the Heights. Inside the Loop, so you're relatively close to the stadium. Pretty easy Uber ride over there. Not far away. We run a bunch of game day specials. I think that we've decided that we're going to run a White Claw special tomorrow. So
that's happening.
Because there'll be a zero loss at the game. And then $2 Lone Star beers. And I think they're doing like $5 or $7 margaritas. And obviously we have like six 50-inch TVs here that'll have different games on. I was going to do a tailgate, and then I decided, you know, we have air conditioning, bathrooms, and a full bar here. It sounds a lot better than sitting out in the NRG parking lot. So I guess the idea is I think some people are going to roll over here and start watching some of the games early and hang out here and then trickle over to the stadium.
Yeah, it's a smart man. I think there's only so many times you can tailgate in the NRG parking lot when it's insanely hot outside. Like, there'll be plenty of opportunities in life to tailgate at the NRG parking lot. You know, when it's not a million degrees outside. So I'm always impressed because you guys, like, drink special wise. I mean, you have like a dollar beer night. I mean, you guys do some deals, which you don't really have to do because the food is so good that people are going to come no matter what. But which reminds me, like, what year was it when you went out to Baker's at Lake House? Brian Baker, one of our mutual college friends, I think you brought the smoker out there, the cooker or whatever. I'm not great with barbecue lingo.
I've been like 2015.
Okay. And like, was like, I guess, you know, you've probably been asked this a million times, but maybe in a short way, just that process of going from like doing things like that and cooking and then just getting feedback. And then like the realization of, this is something that I could not just do or not just try to do, but I could excel at. Like, what was that process like for you?
Well, I tell that little, not a longer version of this story a lot of times, but I don't share the light bulb moment. Was I moved back to Houston and I was working at a job just at the front desk of a gym here of the family friend owned, and one of the trainers in there was having a big Super Bowl party. And I'd always liked cooking, and I'd done hog roast and stuff in high school and done barbecue and the whole shebang. And I mean, I started like tinkering around barbecue when I was a kid, but one of the guys came to me and said, "Hey, I'm having this Super Bowl party. I want to smoke a whole pig for it. I have no clue how to do it. I know that you've done it before. What do I do?" So I like start trying to talk him through the process. And I'm like, you know what? I'll just come over to your house and rent this like a rotisserie spit thing, and I'll come over there and I'll just do it for you. So he's like, all right, man, that would be awesome. So I went over there. I showed up at like 4:30 in the morning, got the fire rolling, and, you know, did like a whole pig on a, you know, outdoor spinning pit over the course of the day and cooked it. And like Super Bowl was about to kick off and I was tired, and I said, all right, you know, pig's done, I'm getting out of here. The guy came up and handed me like $250. And at the time I was like, holy, you know, I wasn't expecting any money. I'm sitting there and I had a crap, you know, kind of crappy job, and holding $250 in my hand. I was like, I pretty much just had fun all day, sat around smoking this pig. Somebody just paid me to do that. And it was like this epiphany moment that, like, you know what, maybe I could actually like get paid to like cook barbecue. And I kind of like laughed it off, but I kind of went in the back of my head, and so kind of got my juices flowing, and I started doing more barbecue stuff and taking it up and giving it away to people and kind of getting their feedback. And finally, the guy who owned the gym, Cedric Johnson, was he he came up to me and was like, Grant, you have a real passion for this. You're great at it. You need to try to do it. He said, you're 24, whatever, you're young. You don't have any kids. This is the time. And you can use my parking lot. You can park a trailer here, whatever. So kind of rolled it around in my head. I took all the money that I'd made at the job and saved it up and went and bought a little trailer and came back. And within a week, had my first pop-up and started selling barbecue there and got my social media going and kind of just grassroots, build that up and, you know, stick to what I knew. But it was interesting because, you know, like when we were in school, like we saw the evolution of Franklin's opening his trailer and then in him opening his brick and mortar and then like eight really good places opening in Austin and becoming this barbecue mecca. And then when I went to Houston, I was expecting that that same kind of thing had happened here and it hadn't. And so I said, well, you know, you got, it's like the biggest city in Texas. Seems like there'd be a pretty big market for some craft style barbecue here. I said, we're not going to do anything crazy. We're just going to try to emulate and do craft barbecue and kind of use old school techniques with new school chef influence on, you know, how to do things and using spear cuts meat and stuff and see how the market responds to it. And it responded really favorably. And so, you know, just kind of put one foot in front of the other and built it up. And we opened here on Airline at December of 2016. So we're coming up on 3 years. And, hopefully by next football season, we'll have opened our second store in San Antonio. So,
yeah, the San Antonio, I was going to ask you about that. It's funny, you know, you mentioned that about Houston, which Houston to me, like, and perhaps I'm biased. Maybe if you agree, perhaps, you know, you're just biased as well. Us, you growing up in Houston, me and growing up in the burbs just outside of Houston. But it's an underrated food city. It's a tremendous food city. Like it's got everything. You know, I know New York gets all the attention and rightfully so. I don't feel like you can have a bad meal in Manhattan wherever you go unless you're going to the Sparrow Pizza in Times Square. But like Houston is a very, very underrated food scene, but there was just the barbecue scene, there just wasn't much there. Whereas, you know, Chinese and Korean and Tex-Mex and Indian and all of these things. And, you know, your traditional, you know, fine dining French style places and Italian and all that stuff. But barbecue wise, there just wasn't much there. And I kind of feel like San Antonio is not quite to that extreme, but it's also in not as tapped into market for barbecue. And I'm sure people are just like starving for that type of those types of restaurants down in San Antonio.
Yeah. You know, San Antonio has a budding food scene too. I mean, you're 100% spot on in Houston. There's not very many cities I would put ahead of Houston in the culinary world with the amount of good food that it's producing here and the rate at which excellent restaurants are opening and surviving here. I mean, people eat out, people have money to spend and, really good chefs are coming to Houston to open concepts because it's, you know, easier entry point here than trying to mortgage your life away to open a place in Manhattan or something like that. With San Antonio, it's kind of a growing economy. One of the things I always say about the Austin barbecue scene is that if you go stand in the line at Franklin, you're going to notice that most of those people are not from Austin. They are in from out of town and on the docket on one of their days was we're going to go stand in line at Franklin barbecue and we're going to eat barbecue. And you get a trickle over effect from everybody else. But like when you come to Austin, you have tons of tourism there. Houston has business travelers, but there's not a lot of people from San Francisco. Like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to spend a week in Houston. I mean, it's not that kind of place. People come here to work. But San Antonio, between the conventions and the traveling, has a lot more of that tourism. And so it's a really attractive place for me to go in as a barbecue restaurant because the two things people want to eat there are Mexican food and barbecue. And it's an underserved barbecue market, as far as I'm concerned. And so for me, it made a lot of sense to move and kind of put a place there.
Now, the big question about when you guys do ultimately open up that San Antonio location, how much Rockets gear do you display?
All of the Rockets gear.
There you go. like you, because I know you guys do stuff for like Astros games and Rockets games and Texas games and those sorts of things right now, but like do you – the Pinkerton San Antonio have a Spurs special? Like, or is that the night where you make beers $15 a piece instead of a dollar a piece?
Yeah. I live by the saying everybody's money's green. So, you know, I'm going to take everybody's money, but – maybe it can be the Houston Rockets watch party bar. I don't know.
There you go. Yeah, there's got to be some hidden Rockets fans in there somewhere that are looking for a place to get out and get away from the Go Spurs Go chants that follow them around that city. Well, getting back to the football conversation, what are you looking for in the Rice game? What's maybe one or two things that you're like, you know what, I would like to see this in this game this weekend.
You know, I was joking around earlier and I said, this is the game for real Texas football nerds that you really wanted to see because you get to check out, it's like preseason football, you know what I mean? You really get an opportunity to see a lot of the depth on the roster. And so things that, you know, I want to see are like guys like Marcus, Washington, dude, love to see him play some wide receiver. A lot of Roshan. I thought he looked awesome last week. Kind of, you know, getting to check out your shiny new toys that you're probably not going to get to play with until next year. So for me, that's kind of the intriguing portion of this game. And then two, does the team come out firing? You know, do they come out and put 21 points up in the first quarter and they'll, you know, kind of dust their hands off and go, okay, LSU is behind us. Oklahoma State is in front of us. We're here, we're ready to do business, and there's no hangover effect. You know, or do they come out kind of sluggish and slow and do that? But, you know, I think, like I said, I think this is a game for true Texas football nerds. That they get to, you know, kind of see what's in the cupboard for them.
Yeah, this to me is like a culture game, you know? Like you get to – if I'm sure the coaching staff might be thinking this in the back of their head too, like – they're so proud of that. And I know it's an overused word in sports, but it's overused because it matters, because it's used in basketball. It's used in football. It's used in baseball. It's because it's important. You know, you have to get that sort of thing in place. And, you know, I think if they come out firing, it's the coaches can kind of nod their head and say, okay, like this is going where we want it to go. They could come out and play extremely well, and that's not always reflected in the scoreboard immediately. Like, you know, they came in against Louisiana Tech, and I don't think they really put a bunch of distance between them and Louisiana Tech until the second quarter, maybe mid to late second quarter, if I'm remembering correctly. But they're playing well. You could tell. You could look at them and say, okay, they're flying around. They're crisp on offense. They're doing the right things. So I this is kind of a culture game to me, I think. And you know, you bump into those guys on occasion and talk to people. Like, that's such a big part of what they're doing right now and something that they're so proud of. And they just dissect every little aspect of that to make sure it's building the right way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's one of the reasons when I was walking into the LSU game that I knew that – had a lot of confidence, man. Yeah, and there were people out there that thought we were going to get blown out, and I was like, dude, you're flat wrong. The culture will not let us get blown out. It ain't going to happen. And if there's ever a time where a team can start getting blown out, it's when they're down 20-7, whatever it was at halftime, and they have the opportunity to be up 21-20. You know, that I know a lot of former Texas teams that would walk into that locker room and start pouting and come out and get spanked in the second half. And the culture is there. The culture does not allow that to happen. And so I think as a Texas fan, you need to walk around with your chest out a little bit that you have a team that has a lot of fight in it. They have a lot of dogs on that team.
Yeah, they do. They've personality wise, you knew going into that LSU game that Texas might lose that game, but it wouldn't be because of physicality or effort. You know, those they're going to bring those things way more often than not, and especially in those big game situations. Did you get a chance before the LSU game to go around to tailgates or anything like that? Like I was amazed at just the sheer volume of people that were around the stadium. And, you know, there were those rumors of, oh, LSU is going to have, you know, 30,000 people in the game and all of this and that. And in reality, I think they probably only had like 3, maybe 4, 5,000 which is normal for you know, a quality visiting road team, that there's going to have some, there are going to be some people that get into the stadium. But this idea that they were going to take over a third of the stadium was turned out to be completely false. But did you get a chance to go around before the game, the tailgates or anything like that? And just, you know, what was it, what was the experience like? Because, I know you've probably walked around some home game atmospheres, you know, in the recent years. And of course I know I have, where it's like, things are just completely dead. And it's just, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that atmosphere outside the stadium, leading up to that game, even more so than 06 in Ohio State, which was the only thing I could compare it to from a home game standpoint, is
right.
Even that, I think, didn't quite match what was going on around the stadium before the game.
It was like, have you ever been to Ole Miss, the Grove?
I have, but not when they're playing. So I haven't gotten that full experience.
What was at Texas before the LSU game was like the Grove on roids.
You know, wow, wall to wall. Something.
Yeah, it was like wall to wall. You know, it was organized chaos. The only thing that I can think, it doesn't come close to that, but there was a similar energy at the tailgates, because there was a tremendous amount of energy outside the stadium. And the other thing about, you know, the 30,000 fans or 30% LSU fans, I said, I think Texas fans did a very good job showing that they can outspend anybody in the country putting butts in seats.
We know Texas fans take great pride in that.
Yes, and it was on display, and I hats off to the Texas fans for keeping raising the ticket prices and then buying the tickets to keep the LSU fans out. But you know, there, I think I actually saw you at this game, at least tailgating wise, the Iowa State game.
Yes, yes, I agree 100% about the energy aspect.
That was a great tailgating environment. Oklahoma State was playing West Virginia. Everybody was huddled around the TVs. There was a real sense of, this is the opportunity to make it to the Big 12. This is the game. And then I don't know if you remember, I will actually always remember this, when Oklahoma State beat West Virginia, just the roar from the tailgates right before a kickoff started, because if we beat Iowa State, we were in, you know, we cleared our way and knocked West Virginia out. And just, there was just such a huge surge of energy after that. And it, I mean, obviously went into the game, the Don't Stop Believing thing, the lights. I mean, that was a pretty ridiculous game. But, I, you know, the LSU was a next level party too. Between the LSU fans and the Longhorns, I saw lots of people turning liquor bottles upside down. I mean, they were getting on it. And then so many people too, because I did like a walkthrough at like 5:30. And you could tell people have been out there since like noon. I went to game day, and there were already people tailgating at 7:30 in the morning while game day was going. People were already sitting in their tailgates and stuff. And there were a lot of people like, oh my God, they were on the cell phone, hammered. It's so hot. I can't believe how hot it is. You know, I'm like, well, you also been drinking for the last 10 hours. So people were primed for that game. And I hope that the Oklahoma State game, you know, that's ABC prime time, 6:30. I feel like that's the national kind of media's kind of fig leaf or whatever to Texas to get back on national television, to make a statement against a good quality opponent, against another spread offense, and kind of allow them to start hyping Texas again.
Yeah, that to me is when we'll find out just what – kind of the season trend for the Texas defense will be, that Oklahoma State game, because unsurprisingly, that's another really good offense under Mike Gundy. They're suspect on defense, but they're going to move the football and they're going to score some points. And that'll, I think we'll find out a lot about the Texas defense as it relates to the rest of the season after that game. Yeah. The Iowa State game, when you mentioned energy initially, that's the first thing I thought of, because I just remember waiting outside to get in the game. And I just like, there was just such, sometimes you can just like feel it, you know, you just feel the energy and the conversation and the chatter. And just, I was like, wow, I haven't really felt this outside of a Texas home game, in a long time. Of course, that was the game where there was that moment in a commercial break or whatever, when the, the cell phone light thing started going on and stuff like that. And it was like, man, like that was an atmosphere that, you know, reminded me of that home game against West Virginia when Geno Smith came in and just turned into an insane shootout of a football game. But yeah, it's at about 5 o'clock, I started walking around to some tailgates and you know, stopping over to a couple of buddies, one's the Orange Woods one and so on. I didn't go to a single tailgate that had alcohol at 5 p.m. They were like, dude, we've gone through like 75 cases of beer and like, oh my gosh, we've gone through this much and that much or whatever. It's like every single tailgate like prepped for this, like got way more than they usually do and just ran out way before because there's so many LSU fans and so many Texas fans. But hopefully this is a sign of things to come as it relates to just, you know, the energy around the Texas football program and those sorts of things, because it was a heck of a weekend. And I know a lot of people are already looking forward to that LSU trip. I'm sure you are. I'm sure you probably, I mean, you plan ahead. You've probably already thought about tickets or have tickets or mapped out something.
We're in.
Yeah.
We're in, dude.
I'm not surprised by that. Now, when you like, do you have to hide when you go around tailgates now? Like, you know, are you kind of a bit more popular at tailgates than you were 3 or 4 years ago?
It's a lot more people want to come up and hang out and talk, and I love it. You know, I think that's great. And I want to talk football. Anybody wants to talk football, I always tell everybody. I said, they always ask me, they're like, oh, where's your food at? And I'm like, dude, I'm here to enjoy myself.
It's game day, yeah.
I said, this isn't about work right now, so let's talk football and go watch some football, and let's leave barbecue out of this. So we're going to go to Morgantown, and then we're also – I've just booked all my stuff for Ames. I finally got my hotel and everything, so I'll be in Ames too, which I'm pretty excited about. November 16th in Iowa is going to be pretty cold.
Yeah, you better pack some winter gear for that. That's going to be an experience. But by the way, how big is Jalen Milroe? How big is he?
Dude, he's a lot bigger than I thought he was going to be.
Isn't he? Like, he's a big dude for only being a junior in high school.
Yeah, like sophomore going into junior year. He has super broad shoulders too. That was one of the first things that stuck out to me, besides him being a lot taller than I thought he was going to be. His frame, he has a really large frame, and he, by the time he's a freshman or sophomore, he has the opportunity. He could be a really big guy. He could carry a lot more weight. And I've not met too many kids that were nicer people too. That he is just genuinely a good dude, and same with his dad. I mean, really good people. We are lucky that they're committed. He's committed to be a Longhorn, because that's a guy who I can see paying dividends long down the road with having him be a Longhorn.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all that you see the impact that he has in recruiting, just with the way people kind of gravitate towards him or always mention him or whatever. And you know, Texas has done a good job of not only securing commitments from personalities and people like that, because I think a lot of people say the same things about Hudson Carter, definitely about Jaquindon Jackson. But you know, getting the talent aspect, but also guys like that people want to play for. Well, I know you're a busy man. You got engaged recently. You've got the barbecue business is going great in Houston. You've got a new one open in San Antonio soon. So we'll get you off this last question. What's your season outlook? I mean, have things changed for you, or are you kind of still in the same place that you were before the season about what you think's going to happen with this team this year?
I think before the season, I was sitting at like really going back and forth between 10-2 and 9-3. And making it to the Big 12 championship game, and I'm still kind of right there. We haven't had this high power in offense on the 40 in a really long time. And like I said, I think that curve, the developmental curve on the defense, is going to be there too. It's just a matter of how quickly we can sort things out. I think that if Texas comes and has a statement game against Oklahoma State, then 10-2 might not be good enough. You know, like they potentially could run the table at that point.
Yeah, it really does seem like that's kind of a season-defining game, but it really will tell us so much about what's happening. So, well, how can people follow you guys? On Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all those things. What's the best way for people to see what's going on with you and you know, follow you for Texas Football Takes and all those sorts of things, but also the restaurant as well?
You can follow me directly at GPinks. GPinks, and then for Pinkerton's Barbecue and All Pictures Barbecue on Instagram and Twitter, at Pinkerton's BBQ on both of those sites.
Well, I appreciate the time, man. Again, I know you're busy. I know you guys are getting ready for a crowd of Texas fans rolling into Houston. Probably I'm sure there are some coming through even today that made a 3-day weekend out of it. So I appreciate you taking the time, and it's been awesome to watch the barbecue business grow, and people that like talking football need to pick your brain. You know, they need to not ask just about barbecue, because I really appreciate the insight you provided on here. A very realistic take about Texas football. So it's clear that you don't spend too much time reading Orange Bloods, because you've got the well-reasoned, informative takes. No, the Orange Bloods guys are awesome. They're obsessed, and they do their homework as well. And many of them have reason takes as well. But again, thanks for the time. I hope you guys have a great weekend down there in Houston. I know it's going to be popular down there. Hopefully, for our sake, we're not like, oh man, what happened to this Texas football team this weekend against Rice? Which I would be very, very surprised. That would happen. So with that, let's wrap up episode 17 of the Dustin McComas Show on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas. Thank you so much to Grant Pinkerton of Pinkerton's Barbecue down in Houston for joining me. Get there. I can't recommend it enough. I mean, it is truly everything on the menu. And I'm not even a big dessert guy, but the desserts are awesome. I've got my Pinkerton's Barbecue hat on right now as well. They've got some really cool gear down there. So get some of that, or look forward to them opening up in San Antonio. So until I talk to everybody next time, we're recording this on Friday. So the weekend is here. Have a great weekend and take care.